Hello and welcome to Amateur Radio Topics. My name's Kevin, I'm VK6 Lima Whiskey, and this evening I'm joined by my good friend Steve, VK6 Victor Zulu, who lives fairly close, within a few kilometres. How are you, Steve?
Yeah, I'm good, Kev, and very nice to join you for this podcast.
Yeah, good to have you along. So, thought we'd have a chat this evening initially about the extended double Z antenna that you've shown some interest in, and I've had some experimentation with. And there's been various versions of this published over the years in different formats, flat tops, inverted Vs, slopers. And after some modelling, I find that not all these combinations work as well as perhaps people think they should.
No, and that's where your ability to model antennas has actually helped in terms of my general understanding, Kev, of what is theoretically possible, because as you discovered, there is quite a lot of misconceptions about EDZ.
Yeah, it's quite a nice antenna, and it's just, I think the fact that it's a single wire appeals to a lot of people. You haven't got to start trying to string up various elements. You can hang it from a tree or a tower. But what I have found is that the flat top version, the one that's generally speaking, where you see this in magazines and whatever, and you see this nice amount of gain, and it's got a nice narrow beam width, and it all looks great. That only really occurs with a flat top. You can get something similar with a sloping version, but the worst case scenario is an inverted V, because the current points on the antenna that give you the gain are then too close together, and everything basically just cancels out, becomes a fairly high angle radiator, albeit omnidirectional. Not quite what you want.
No, and I think it's I think one thing for those people who are not aware of the EDZ or extended double Z, I think to start with, Kev, is if you actually explain and so we're starting off, if you actually explain how you know what just let's I guess do a bit of a chat about the actual it as a wire antenna in terms of the wavelength.
Well, it essentially it's a single wire that will give you some gain over a dipole or a vertical, and it does this by essentially having the two elements spaced at a certain distance, which means that the center point, the feed point, is not something you can just feed with coax. You've either got to feed it with open wire line and then have a matching device back at in the shack, or you can feed it with the defined length of open wire line and then straight into 75 or 50 ohm coax, which gives you an impedance transformation at the middle. But the important aspect of it is the fact that it's essentially slightly better than two halfways in phase, because the elements are spaced further apart. That's the important thing. So typically an extended double Z for 20 meters is about, I think mine's about 90 foot long, something like that, 88 or 90 feet. I cut mine for the CW portion of the band. So it's quite a large antenna, actually, for most people to fit into their backyards.
Right. It's two by basically two wires, 0.64 of a wavelength.
That's right, 0.64 of a wavelength each side. That's correct, yeah. So as opposed to two half waves in phase, which is each wire is 0.5 of a wavelength and fed at the centre, it's very high impedance, obviously, but you can get around that with a quarter wavelength of open wire line and then into coax and maybe a coaxial choke at that point, then back to the shack. But the two halfways in phase do not give you as much gain as the extended double Z. The extended double Z, by virtue of having the extra lengths on each side, the 0.64 as opposed to the 0.5, gives you a little bit more gain. There are some downsides, though. The extra gain comes with some disadvantages. which we have discussed before in terms of the beam width.
Yes, and I think that's the key thing. You know, you and I have talked quite a lot of the, over the years of there's no free lunch, generally speaking. But sometimes, whilst you might not get a free lunch, you can certainly get a larger lunch. And I think that conception of if you have a half wave dipole, you know, you either add elements behind it or in front of it, or you make the you know, the dipole longer and a half wave, and by having two elements that are, yeah, as you say, a half wave in phase, two half waves in phase, so that would be what, Kev, in terms of dB gain over a dipole?
I think it gives you about 1.5 dB, something like that, two half waves in phase. It's not huge.
Right.
It gives you a little bit. It gives you a little bit more directivity, and it does work. It does work okay, providing you can get it up at least half a wavelength on the band of choice. It's not quite so sensitive in terms of whether or not it's a flat top or an inverted V. It works best as a flat top, but it will still work as an inverted V, the two half waves in phase.
Right. So it's really extending when you start extending those. The two radiators that are in phase beyond a half wave, Kev, that you start, things start getting complicated in terms of whether the thing works in a similar manner to if it was a flat top.
Yeah, that's right. So it's to do with the reason you get the extra gain out of the EDZ is because the current points are moved further apart. So this helps with the gain, but it reduces the effective beam width down to something around about 40, 45 degrees. It's quite narrow compared with, say, a two-element beam, or even a three-element beam. It's probably got a slightly wider beam width. But it is quite a good low-angle radiator, and providing you can keep the top fairly flat, then it works okay. There were some compromises that I did model that worked quite well in Easy NEC, which was to fold down maybe around about 20 feet or 6 meters at each end, but still keep the top flat. And that didn't have a terrible effect on the radiation pattern, because it was maintaining the distance between the two elements in a flat plane. It's when you invert it and bend it in the middle, you've got the problem.
Right. So what you're saying, Kev, is because if we consider the antenna, let's say 0.64 of a wavelength, by dropping 6 meters at each end, we come to about 12 meters. Where we've reduced the span, so
it's about 40 foot then, so it's not too bad.
No, and so effectively that antenna is smaller than two half waves in phase, but yep, you're going to get more gain by bending those ends down. So again, it's I guess what we've talked about is people not quite so being aware that yes, you can bend an aerial, drop ends of an aerial down, and as long as you keep the central span flat, then with an extended double zep, you can maintain that gain. Have I got that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You still keep that gain, and it's got a little bit more gain. Probably better 1.5, maybe 2 dBs more gain than having the two half waves in phase. So
we're looking at roughly about sort of 2.7 to 3 dB gain over a dipole.
Yeah, about 3 dBd is about it. In fact, I think I've seen, and I haven't really checked this out, but I think I've seen it published whereby it's for a single wire antenna, it's the most gain you can get from that arrangement without having parasitic elements. Yep. On a given band. So with the extended double set, and that's, you know, I mean, it's essentially it's what's made it quite popular with, you know, a range of people that only really have space for a single wire. So while we're talking, I was just having a look actually at, I've got a 40 meter two half waves in phase modeled here at half wave in height. And it's quite interesting. The beam width is actually around about 60 degrees in either direction. Whereas I know, I haven't got the EDZ up on the screen at the moment, but I know the EDZ is less than that. But the EDZ gives you a little bit more gain. So
yes,
it's kind of tricky. If you've got a defined path you'd like to work, like you'd like to work into Europe or you'd like to work into JA or the US or whatever, an EDZ can be really quite useful, as I found messing around with my receive antennas, if you get it lined up correctly on the path you want. But, you know, you can, with mine, for instance, I find mine works really quite well to Northern Europe and really not so well to Southern Europe, because that beam width is only around about 40 degrees on the EDZ.
Yes, and that's a key point, dear listeners. One of the things that, in terms of what I guess I've learned from Kev over the years, is you if you are looking for an antenna with gain, you've always got to think about the narrower your lobe or your two main lobes, in the case of a bidirectional aerial like an EDZ, that you can end up having a much smaller kind of 3 dB beam width than you would actually from a beam. And one of the things, you know, Kev, I think the fact you got me interested in the quad, probably initially getting on for 30 years ago, was the fact that the quad, with its big 3 dB beam width of 60 degrees, is actually a much wider beam width than you would actually have from an EDZ, although you've got a bi-directional beam.
Yeah. While you're talking this, I've just brought up the EDZ for 40 metres, modelled at a half wavelength high. And, yeah, it's quite interesting. It's got some side lobes, the EDZ. Naturally, it's got some side lobes that spill out, which are at right angles to the main lobes. But the main lobe on this antenna in EZNEC, the beam width comes out 32 degrees. It's pretty narrow. That's 32 degrees on the 3 dB points, so either side of the main heading. And but the gain on allowing for ground reflection, the gain showing on EZNEC is 11.3 dBi, reference to an isotropic, whereas the two half waves in phase is about 9.5 dBi, reference to an isotropic. So there's about 1.8 dBs difference in gain between the EDZ and the two half waves in phase. And of course, you know, they've both got gain over a plane dipole as well. So, yeah, but it's quite narrow. It's surprisingly narrow, actually, when you look at it. And if you put two of these up at right angles, you'd have some significant gaps on the compass in terms of trying to work DX.
I'm guessing for us, and it's like, because I guess there might be people listening from all over the world, but for us, with an EDZ, we could use it on long paths and short paths to Europe, but we would probably, as you pointed out earlier, really only cover, you know, we could say pointed at the UK and get Western Europe, but when it came to Southern or Northern Europe, the beam width would, you know, is the gain is beginning to fall off quite steadily. And I guess for probably if you were a European, Kev, I'm guessing that you would end up covering maybe the northern part of the US, but not necessarily, you know, in the southern states. You might find that the beam width is, it's the gain is falling off quite steadily by then.
Yeah, It's kind of interesting. I know you mentioned the quad, and I know you're interested in putting another quad back up. And I just bought a tournament quad up for 40, modelled in the same fashion, around about the same sort of height. And that's got a beam width of about 75 degrees on the 3 dB points, quite wide. So there's a big difference between the two, actually, as I've found. It does depend a little bit on the height above ground. If it's not at half wavelength or whatever, all of these figures will change depending on how high you have it above the ground. But in essence, it's a useful antenna, but maybe not the best choice for all round coverage. That's all.
Yes, and I think again, both of us, and again, both of us being interested in contesting, and the good thing about the wire antennas is the low visibility, the fact that in terms of three dimensions, a wire really is almost a one-dimensional aerial. So the ability to run it, I think, across a backyard, or from one side of a yard to another, there are some benefits, but it's looking at, does your yard suit an aerial that fits in a long thin footprint? If so, then and if it's worth considering that kind of long type aerial. But if you've got a sort of more of a square backyard, a two element beam made out of a half wave dipole and a reflector could be a better choice.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, the takeoff angle on, I'm looking at the 40-meter modeling here at half wave length above ground. It's about 25 degrees at the peak, and it's got a 3 dB point down at about, what is this? The 3 dB point's down at about 15 degrees, something like that. Between 10 and 15, about 12 degrees maybe. So it's quite a, it's, I mean, it's quite a decent low angle radiator if you can get it up at a half wavelength, but then so is a half wave dipole. So
Yeah.
it's not, there's no sort of like real magic about this. It's just a piece of wire that gives you a little bit of gain. And in return for that gain, you get a narrower beam width in either direction. That's all.
Yes, and I think that's, in terms of where we started, and this is the, I guess, our thing about no such thing as a free lunch. But you recently have come up with an idea which, whilst would take up less space lengthwise than a extended double ZEP or two half waves in phase, but is to use two or three half wave elements together to also form a bi-directional antenna.
Yeah, that's worked quite well. I mean, I had a particular reason for trying to develop that antenna because these are really part of my receive antennas that are around about 100 meters away from the transmit antennas. And this is all to do with being interested in contest and SO2R operation and trying to get some distance between the receive antennas and the transmit antennas just to make it easier to operate SO2R on adjacent bands. So after quite a bit of experimentation, I came up with the idea of trying to have a beam that was bi-directional but three elements, so I get a little bit more gain. I try and retain a fairly decent beam width off in either direction, and a low angle of radiation by getting up around about half a wavelength high on 20 meters, and the elements were inverted V, so that was another a good thing. I only really needed a single catenary wire to hang these off at the center, and fed with cheap RG6 quad shield TV coax. And really, on receive, it worked very well. And it got around the problem of the narrow beam width, either end. It was a little bit wider, but it still had a nice gain figure over a dipole.
So,
But obviously a little bit more complicated than a single wire, but nevertheless, it still fits into a fairly compact format.
Yes, and I think there is that good thing of going, there are a number of ways of getting, gain. And the thing that interested me, and I'm not sure, Kev, whether you talked on a podcast about your bi-directional beam before, but the most bang you can get out of a single wire antenna, if you discount the V beams and the rhombics, is the extended double zap. But there is a way of, most people know about wire Yagis, and the fact that two elements will give them 5 dB gain, but they don't necessarily realize that you can turn a Yagi doesn't have to be a unidirectional antenna. That if you put a director on either side of a dipole, you can get a gain in both directions. And I think your utilization of this is is very original.
Yeah, the other thing as well is if you model it, you start to see that by having the two parasitics either side of the driven element, you're getting a slightly lower angle of radiation in both directions as well. So that's actually quite important in the sense of, well, if you're looking to work DX, I suppose it's quite important.
And I think when people think about gain over a half wave dipole, what is not necessarily obvious is people see that there's one element behind the other, but they don't necessarily realise, unless they you look hard at an article, is the fact that a parasitic element in the same plane as a driven element is going to drop your angle of radiation.
So you
are dependent above height, above ground.
I mean, the modelling doesn't always tell the whole story, because obviously none of us live in the perfect locations. But with some sensible estimates made about the ground conductivity and that sort of thing, these antennas, it does generally give you the idea of what's going to happen when you put this antenna up. So I'm just taking a look at the three-element bidirectional now on the modelling, and the takeoff angle in either direction is 20 degrees at the maximum point. I've got a 3 dB point down at 10 degrees, so it's quite a nice low-angle radiator. It's got virtually no high angle in the middle. The lobes are nicely defined there. Let me see. Let's have a look on the azimuth here. So they're it's about 55 degrees or something. Let's just have another look at this. Yeah, 56 degrees either side. So that's much better than the 35 degrees or 32 degrees or whatever the EDZ was in terms of bidirectional antenna. You've at least got a chance of working some stuff off the side of the beam, maybe in a contest situation, or maybe just in a general a general sort of DX situation. The DBI figure on this is down at about 10.3 or 10.4. So it's only really about a dB down on the EDZ in either direction, but you're getting a much fatter beam width. And it's a lower angle of radiation as well. So maybe there is a free lunch here, Steve.
well, that's why I think, in terms of things, and we've tried to find various metaphors for these things, Kev, and it's like, well, if you haven't actually got a free lunch, maybe you've got a free dessert.
Yeah. The trick to the three-element bidirectional is you've got to make sure the elements are quarter wave spaced apart. Then it works. I've tried messing around to make it smaller, in other words, bring the parasitics in closer to the driven element in the middle, and just can't get it to work. And the other nice thing about keeping the parasitics a quarter wavelength away from the driven element is it keeps the feed impedance relatively high. Whereas if you start squeezing the parasitics closer to the driven element, the feed impedance drops dramatically, and then that causes you a problem with the matching. So bear in mind, you know, that this is fed fairly crudely with just some 75 ohm coax and a few turns of that coax to act as a bit of a, you know, an RF choke at the feed point. So there's nothing, you know, nothing particularly technically complicated about what I've done, but keeping those parasitics spaced nicely away from the driven element does help.
Yeah, because I think a lot of you and I have experimented for some time, probably well over a decade, Kev, with antennas, either loops or...
I think I've been experimenting for about 40 years, Steve. I'm still experimenting, so maybe I just haven't quite found the right antennas yet.
No, but I think the thing that perhaps a common conception, Kev, which you know, sometime over the time we've known each other, I think you worked out first, was is if you actually space elements. I mean, we all were brought up with the spacing antennas, you know, an eighth of a wave, 0.125 of a wavelength, and that,
yeah, yeah,
the classical Yagi is based, and the you know, the quad, basically the classic quad is similar, but the notion that if you push the elements wider apart, a dipole and a loop or a loop elements will still couple together quite well. But the impedance will rise, and that's something which you know, you've used very effectively in this antenna, so that it's very the bidirectional beam, so it's quite easy to match. But I think that sort of rule of thumb, you know, most people would think both you and I have used quad antennas with quarter wave spacing rather than eighth wave spacing, and just you know, that's because it was convenient for us for various reasons, because of where trees were located.
Yeah, well, the quad's a bit more forgiving because it's a much lower Q antenna, and you can get away with the closer spacing because natively the quad element has got an impedance at the center of about 120 ohms, something like that. And you put an element behind it at an eighth of a wavelength, and it starts to bring the feed impedance down a little bit closer to 50 ohms. Mm. So you can get away with a bit more on a quad in terms of a closer spaced element than you can maybe a Yagi. But, you know, it's sometimes it just depends on the space that you've got. We're fairly fortunate, Steve, that we have some space. So I've got the space for two towers, and that has opened up some opportunities for low band wire beams, you know, fixed wire beams in certain directions that I can instantly switch. And that's all, you know, it's all quite interesting stuff. Not everybody has that space to do that type of thing. And I think the other thing that's to be borne in mind is that with most beam antennas, providing you, if you've got a parasitic element, whether it's a director or reflector, even if maybe there's not as much gain as you'd like, you nearly always get a lowering of the radiation angle. And so the perceived gain is sometimes a little bit more than what you may expect in most situations, if you're just comparing it with a simple dipole or vertical or whatever.
Yes, and I think, again, that's something which can get lost in antenna handbooks. It's usually there, but again, I think, Kev, a lot of people will see the nice, they'll look at the extended double zap and they'll think, oh, this is really good because it's got this gain over a dipole. But having the two elements in the same plane means that whilst there is the gain comes at the expense of having a smaller beam width, but the fact that there is no lowering of the angle of radiation as you would have with a an aerial with either a driven element with a reflector or director, that, as you say, that kind of gets skipped over to some extent. I think, and my argument would be, is what you've discovered through having a large block and the things that we've both experimented with is, if you're you and I have, well, you've done it for 80 meters, you've built aerials with reflectors for 80 and even 160. I've more done it for 80 and 40, with the exception of my I tried my 160 meter folded up quad, but all this is totally outrageous for the average suburban dweller. But I think if you've got a 30 by, you know, a 10 meter by 10 meter backyard, there's nothing to stop you from having a bi-directional wire beam, which is going to give you, you know, more gain than an extended double zep and a wider beam width.
Yeah, and sometimes they're just easier to fit into the space you've got available. I probably haven't told you this story, Steve, but many years ago, it's a long time ago, when I lived in the UK and I was living with my parents and very small backyard, and I had a three-element tri-bander. I can't remember what brand it was, but it doesn't really matter. It's just a general three-element tri-bander on a 13-foot boom.
Right.
And that just neatly fitted into the width of the back garden. The back garden was only about 15 foot wide. So consequently, when I turned the antenna around, it was hanging over both sets of neighbours' properties. But anyway, I kind of got away with it. I was only a teenager at the time, and I wasn't so concerned about what the neighbours thought. And even my parents probably weren't so concerned about what the neighbours thought either, which was quite handy. particularly my father. But anyway, I digress, because the thing with this is, never mind what the neighbours thought, if I part this antenna so that it sat neatly between the boundaries of the block of land, it was basically pointing west.
So I
had a copy of the ARRL antenna handbook at that time, and interestingly enough, if you take a look in there for two-element close-space beams, it actually gives you slightly more gain for a driven element and a director as the parasitic element,
right,
if they're closely spaced. So I thought, well, this is a good opportunity to play around with a 40-meter antenna. I was quite keen on 40 meters. I just had a dipole, and I never really got out that well. The house was in a valley. It was on chalky soil. You know, it really didn't have much going for me. And the boom of the antenna was at about 35 feet, so it wasn't really even high enough. But I put an inverted V driven element up, and in front of it I put a parasitic element, which I just cut a bit short. I had no antenna analyzer, I had no way of modeling this. I just did it all, you know, via the ARRL handbook, so to speak, just cut it all to formula. Put this up, and the difference on 40 meters was actually quite remarkable. I was only running 100 watts at the time on CW, and all of a sudden, in the evening in the UK, I was starting to work W's and out into the Midwest, and it was a completely different antenna to just having a half wave dipole at 35 feet. And the difference in gain may have only been a few dBs, let's say. Let's say I managed to get a 3 dBs out of this arrangement or whatever. It may have been more, who knows, a bit close to the ground. The elements were inverted V-style. But I worked more DX with that than I worked with the dipole, just anecdotally. And it wasn't a great antenna. It wasn't really even high enough to but it was definitely giving me some sort of gain in the direction I wanted it, which was to the US, which at the time was more attractive than maybe working in some other directions. So obviously it wasn't any good for JA, it was off the side, and the other direction was Europe, where on 40 meters in the evenings in the UK, it was pretty noisy in those days. So the antenna had two benefits. It was pointing towards the west, was stations I wanted to work, and in the other direction it gave me a little bit of front to back ratio. And that was a really simple two element wire beam hung off a tri-bander in a UK suburban environment that I know when I used to go back to the UK to visit my parents, I looked at the backyard and I really thought, well, I'm not even quite sure how I managed to get any antennas into this backyard. So it can be done. But, you know, you just a bit of imagination. You can find a way to put up a wire beam, maybe based on a tri-bander for the lower bands, if you're prepared to, you know, live with the fact that the antenna is only going to point in one direction. So,
yes, and I think, listeners, this is the key thing, which again sometimes get lost in terms of discussions in handbooks, because they're basically technical documents, and yes, they'll describe the physical construction and the theory behind an antenna, but it won't necessarily describe the actual effect that this can actually have on how your station performs, Kev. And I think that is the that is the key thing. Now, something I alluded to earlier, I live on half an acre, whereas Kev is on a hectare. Now, half an acre, probably for people in the UK, it sounds absolutely enormous. But one's ambitions always expand to fill the blocks you have.
Yes, as my ex-wife or my long-suffering ex-wife Julie would say, not another antenna.
Well, that's right. And there is a, yes, so I actually built at one point, and I'm not sure, Kev, if you ever saw it, but I did build a fixed a delta loop array using lots of large capacity hats and trombone type linear loading, and in one place capacity hats in another. And this just fired in one direction. But to have an antenna that actually had a front-to-back ratio, the loops were really too close together, and I didn't experience much in the way of gain. But what it did do, I had some noisy houses to the south of me, the beam fired north, and it was just amazing to actually have some rejection off the back of the antenna.
Yeah, it can all make a difference depending on what you're interested in at the time. Having some sort of directional antenna that gives some gain as well, it's really useful.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, as we've both discovered, that on HF, where everybody concentrates a lot of the time in, you know, you want your aerial to fire either long path and or short path to a particular direction. But when it comes to low band aerials, to have something that fires in the direction of the grey line, which usually will, if you're north of the equator, will tend to lie to the south of you most of the time, and in our case, being at the bottom of the world, so it will lie to our north, and even managing to get an aerial that will fire in one direction at the grey line can have a huge effect on 80 and 40 and 160 even more.
Yeah, well, certainly the grey line terminator on 80 and 160, it's if you've got the antenna orientated towards that, they can help. But as we've discussed, we could do a whole podcast on the low bands. But as we've discussed on 160, the paths are not always entirely predictable. And I found that when I had that directional array for 80 and 160, it was quite interesting. But in the sense that anything that was what would be deemed maybe DX, you know, working 5,000 or 7,000 kilometers, was kind of predictable with the parasitic array. You could hear the gain, the front to back, but then anything much over that, the paths were fairly random on 160, and it wasn't necessarily, the paths didn't necessarily correspond to the beam headings from VK6. And I'm talking about the long haul stuff into Europe or into the US. It just what yeah, and you, I know you've experienced this yourself. But the problem with 160 is it's not that easy to get a, not that easy to get a directional antenna for transmit. But of course, you can pick this up if you've got directional antennas on receive. You can figure out if you've got some beverages or some loops or whatever. You can figure out that the signals are not always coming in from the direction you think they should be coming in. On 160, and the same does happen now to going on 80 meters, although it's a little bit more predictable on 80.
Yes, and I think again, actually having an antenna which is not an omnidirectional radiator, or you're not trying to achieve that. If you start pointing if it's a transmit antenna or receive antenna, you became much more aware of some paths being predictable and more predictable than others, and especially in terms of with very long distances and on the lower frequencies, this can be, absolutely counterintuitive. There's all sorts of other propagation mechanisms. But I think the thing, having an aerial that, points in one direction, even if it's fixed, it usually has all kinds of benefits that we don't necessarily predict in relation to noise rejection and often indirect paths.
Yeah, that's very true. Anyway, that's probably a subject for another podcast, Steve. Yeah. I think that's quite a, we've obviously had a fair bit of experience between the pair of us on the LF bands with all various antennas. So that would actually be a good subject for another podcast, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully. I think in terms of joining you sometimes for these programs and us having a conversation, that we give people an idea about experimenting with antennas, which is based more on, experience and a feel for what happens, and maybe encourages people to... try something out rather than just stick to their simple half wave dipole.
Well, that's where the modeling is quite good. You can get an idea from the modeling about what's going to happen, but there's nothing, it doesn't substitute getting on the bands, testing it out, and seeing what the results are. That's the interesting part about it, to see if the theory and the modeling is borne out by the practical real life experience.
Absolutely. And it must have been so exciting, Kev, when you put that director in front of that 40 meter dipole. All of a sudden, in this totally impractical space, you created an aerial with gain. And I think that's what I hope. When I write articles or when you and I talk with other people, talk to an audience, is that it encourages them to actually try and, their space may be far less hopeless than an antenna handbook has led them to believe.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes you just got to improvise a little bit, I think. Yeah. So we'll probably draw it to a close there, Steve. So far, you've set a record, actually. None of my podcasts have ever gone this long. I normally draw the line at around about 35 minutes, and I think we're up to probably three quarters of an hour at the moment.
which is
quite good. And if anybody's got any questions, they can email me direct at vk6lw.kev@gmail.com. And you can certainly, both Steve and I are on QRZ.com anyway, can be contacted by email via that medium. And there will be some other podcasts. Steve and I will get together and have a chat about some other things that are of mutual interest to us. As you can see, it's probably a little bit antenna orientated, but that's been the theme of most of my podcasts up until now. with a little bit of chat about the radios we use and some of the other peripheral equipment. So there's plenty of scope there, actually, Steve, for us to get together again and explore some other areas.
Yes, well, I hope we've managed to give our readers a as though they were in the bar of their local pub, a business to two old farts, something in the style.
Yeah, let's not talk about the stories from the pub, Steve. This might be a bit too tricky.
Yes, hopefully. And please, listeners, feel free to open a beverage of your choice whilst listening to us. It may help.
Okay. So 73s for now. Thanks for listening and look forward to bringing you our next podcast. I'm Kevin, VK6 Lima Whiskey, and you've been listening to Amateur Radio Topics.